Are you ready?
I am ready. Okay, I changed it up a little bit. Sorry. For one dry kiss. Please don't listen to this podcast if you are sensitive to cursing, sexy talk, or other things that are in an irreverent podcast like this one. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to Hallmark movies. Each episode we recap one scintillating Hallmark movie. Today we're kicking off Swoon in June. What? With It Was Always You.
It was always you, Corinne, looking at you from across the phone.
Ooh, hey there.
Mm-hmm. You were always my podcast co-host, and I just want you to know that.
Thank you. I'd like to introduce you to the ever eloquent Tamara Cosio, who's just bathing me in compliments right now. Thank you.
Ever eloquent. I'm bathing. Bathe, sponge bathing you and all the love right now, Corinne.
Let's leave the sponge bath.
Introduce my very moist at this point co-host, Corinne Eddy.
I thought you liked me. I was wrong.
But because I'm bathing you in compliments, not because, you know, you're moist for other reasons, if that's what you think.
So I have a question for you, Dan. Did you think this movie was swoon-worthy?
This is my first movie with Tyler Hines, and I enjoyed him very much. And I do think it was pretty swoon-worthy. Mm-hmm. There was a very nice kiss at the end, which we don't always see.
Yes, that kiss was actually, I would say, kind of hot, which is not usually a word that I would use to describe a Hallmark kiss.
Right? Yeah. You're like lukewarm, maybe, yeah. Tempered, but this one was pretty hot.
Sometimes painful. Sometimes I'm like, oh, honeys.
And a lot of times dry.
Very dry.
Which is hence the name of the podcast.
I'd like to take a moment to explain to you why I chose this pick for Swoon in June. Now, you chose the next movie we have coming up, Taking a Shot at Love. Right. But today it's all about me. And so one of the reasons why I chose this was because I joined several Hallmark groups on Facebook to research for this podcast. And if there's one movie they are wild about, it's The Color of Rain, a horribly overwrought movie with Lacey Chabert that makes people cry and makes me half enraged, half barfy. But if there is a second movie they're wild about, it's It Was Always You.
So this is your first pick for Swoon in June.
Yeah, because I felt like the people who had never listened to our podcast demanded it. You had also been like, hey, you talk about this Tyler Hines. Where is he? And why haven't we seen one of his movies? And Tyler Hines, or as I like to call him, Ty-Ty, is my favorite Hallmark actor. And he is in some of my favorite Christmas movies and knows how to make me swoon. Thank you, Ty-Ty. My final reason is Nelson Wong is in it. He is a delightful actor, and I've seen him sprinkled throughout Hallmark movies in roles like the charming front desk person. I'm so excited that he gets some moments to shine in this movie, and I'd love to see him as a romantic lead. Nelson Wong is playing Eugene, the mail carrier, in this movie.
I figured, because he was the only Asian that I saw in the whole thing.
He was the only bit of color in the entire movie. Yeah, they didn't really work hard at that at all. Like, throw us a little bone here. Well, they did. They threw us Swoon Wong, but he makes me swoon.
I was like, my shoulders were up. I'm all, don't say the help. Don't say the help. Don't say the help.
No.
They could have had a maid of color in the house, cleaning. Ew. Do you have a synopsis for us?
Oh, why, yes. As a matter of fact, I do. Funny you mention that. It is artisanally crafted, per use.
Oh, God. Here we go. On an artisanal journey.
I will take you on an artisanal journey. Dr. Elizabeth Hall and Dr. George Belling are engaged and planning on spending about 9 days at George's family's house. They have a surprise party planned for his mom, wedding planning during the week, and an engagement party the following weekend. They're both dentists who share a practice together and are a match made in heaven. They are aligned in their goals and they love lists. Everything is going according to plan until George has to leave the island to take care of a dental emergency. And George's unpredictable brother, David, steps in to help. Will Elizabeth lose her shit because David is such a wild card? Will George make it back to the island in time to help with any of the wedding planning? Will other surprises unfold? Stay tuned to find out.
Dun, dun, dun.
What about you? Do you have any fun facts for us?
I have a few. I have a few fun facts.
Ooh.
This was Aaron Krakow and Tyler Hines' first movie together. And oh. I think they cast Aaron first, and she was a fan of Tyler and wanted to do something with him. So she let it be known, and they cast him as David.
Wow, I did not know that.
And apparently they hit it off over text pretty quickly, hence all the good chemistry with them and especially that kiss. Although the casting was really, really good, I think. Strong casting. Many of the people, both writers and actors, were worried about the plot going sideways. I kept seeing that word in various articles since it did involve a love triangle. But after everything was said and done, everyone seemed pretty happy with the results, as were we. Or else we wouldn't be putting it in Swoonin' June. I could not find a lot of fun facts about Erin. She's very private, and rightfully so. She wants to be private. That is totally her prerogative.
Congratulations, Erin.
Yeah, for not splashing your face in business all over the internet, because I looked. She studied at Juilliard and started her career in theater, and she keeps her private life very private, as I said before.
Wait, is it private or is it very private?
It's between private and very private, so the private without the R-Y.
But private.
So I couldn't find much more except that she's really cool with her fans, many of whom love her from her long-running show, When Calls the Heart. And I believe those fans are called Hardies.
Yes,
and Corinne gave me a fun fact on top of Tyler Hines.
Ooh.
Okay, not bad. Bad choice of words. Gave me a fun fact about
Tyler Hines. Hey.
And Tyler Hines fans are called Hineys. Oh. So we have Hardies and we have Hineys. I think I would prefer the Hiney myself. And lastly, I thought this was super fun. My favorite fun fact is in one scene, Tyler's character, David, is sitting in a tree playing a guitar looking very cool. Mm. And I thought he was going for the deep brooding type, the misunderstood musician, if you will. But in actuality, this scene was improvised. He was originally supposed to be up in the tree whistling, but Tyler can't whistle in real life, so they gave him a guitar instead.
Oh, well, he did a nice little strummy on that guitar, I have to say. I
sure did.
I liked it.
I wonder if he, like, didn't know how to play guitar, what they would have done. Like, what, do you play any instruments, Tyler? I actually play the trombone. Okay, well, let's see if we can wrestle one up, and you could just be serenading yourself with the trombone.
I was thinking just, like, some cymbals. He's like, ching, ching, ching. I like the trombone angle.
There's nothing sexier than a man playing a trombone in a tree.
Mmm, you would know.
I wouldn't know, no. And that concludes my fun facts. Yes, 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 yes.
Ooh, okay. Well, then let me start us off with the journey of It Was Always You.
It was always you.
Yeah. What better way to start off a movie than to have a dentist peering at you from the screen? Yes, it's Dr. Elizabeth Hall, our protagonist. She's a dentist with a no-nonsense attitude, a blunt bob haircut, and a shared practice with her fiancé, Dr. George Belling. Elizabeth and George were childhood friends who reconnected in dental school. It was totally meant to be. She shares her meet-cute with the patient she's treating. He may not floss, but he does have a great suggestion for her honeymoon. My wife and I took a 6-week tour through South America, hiking in the Andes, ziplining over the Inca Trail, and visiting Machu Picchu, he says. It sounds fun, she says, but I don't think it's something Dr. Belling and I would do. Doesn't like roughing it. I'm thinking, hiking in the Andes, ziplining over the Inca Trail, and visiting Machu Picchu isn't really roughing it. If he'd been like, we took a backpacking trip through, you know, that's roughing it. But
yeah,
I digress. When he responds, you don't regret the things you do regret the things you don't do, she retorts smugly, oh, like flossing. Oh, you dentists, with your big flossing conspiracy. I see you. And I totally had forgotten when I suggested that we do this movie for Swoon in June that Tamara had recently gone through some extensive dental work. So my apologies.
Mm-hmm. Some very painful dental work.
Yes.
When I first outlined the notes, I put in my first line, we meet Elizabeth in the dentist chair and Corinne is secretly trying to traumatize me.
Oh my gosh. I felt so bad. I was like, oh my gosh. I didn't even think about it. Bad friend, bad friend.
We have a knack for doing that. Like our movies just kind of are a reflection of life. Like for a good year, maybe 6 months to a year after my dad died, like every single movie that we saw.
Dead dad, dead dad, dead dad.
Like a dead dad or a dying dad.
Movies that did not mention a single dying dad in them, mind you.
And you would be sitting there like so uncomfortable, like fucking shit again. And I'd be like weeping. No, I wasn't weeping.
Oh, it's a romantic comedy. I was just like, yeah, well. Wait, there's a dad dying in it? What the hell?
But this one, not as bad. Not as bad as the dead dad trilogy that we went on for that length of time. Across the office, Dr. Belling thanks Denise, the dental assistant, for all her great work with that pesky crown on their patient. And Denise says, no problem. It was a lot of fun. Pause. What the fuck, Denise?
Ugh. You know crowns. Okay. They're so much fun.
Oh my God, yes. Elizabeth and George, at first they seemed like siblings or work chums at best, and it seriously took me a few minutes to figure out that this was the fiancé that she was referring to in the previous scene. As they leave, Denise calls out to them, have a good time on your vacation! But they're not having a vacation, they're going to visit George's family on the island that they grew up at. And there's too much planning to do with the engagement party and the wedding and all that stuff. Elizabeth's been in plan mode for months. She has all her lists and the itinerary down to practically the minute. And she also bought George's mom, Diane, a lovely cashmere blanket for, the surprise party. They're throwing her while they're there. And make sure you don't spoil the surprise, she tells George. Only me and your sister and you know about it. They say, see you tomorrow. Go on their separate ways. After that, there is the quintessential panoramic shot of the city that they usually put in the beginning. Aww. And instead they put
dental face.
Elizabeth's face. Yeah, they put Elizabeth's dental face. So they buried the lead a little bit in the movie, but there is the panoramic shot that I love so much. It looks like they're in Seattle,
Seattle, Canada. Yes.
Seattle, Canada. Very well known for its Space Needle, but they don't call it the Space Needle because it's Canada. They call it the Space Needle. Next, we see Elizabeth talking to her bestie, Abby, about all things wedding in a very strange space that I could not figure if it was her apartment or actually a wedding venue because there were many very large flower arrangements and chandeliers all over
it's
the place.
Her house. She's a dentist. She's like, dollar dollar bills, y'all. All those crowns. You know about dentists and how much they charge.
Oh, yes, I do. But it was almost like a loft space that they were trying to make into an apartment. Mm-hmm. It was very strange.
There was tile on the floor.
It was a weird space.
Yeah, it was weird.
Bestie asks, who's helping with the wedding arrangements when you go back home? And Elizabeth says, oh, George's mom and his sister Louise. She moved back home after a pretty bad breakup. And I need everybody to Hallmark this for later because I have some serious issues.
Okay.
Hallmark it for later. I will come back to it.
I'm intrigued.
And I swear I will because I actually wrote it in my notes. Yes, as was I when I got to there at that point. Abby says, oh, is George's brother David going to be there? David is George's free-spirited brother who is traveling the world and always sends postcards regaling them with his adventures. And Abby asks if he's cute. And Elizabeth says, I have no idea. I haven't seen him in years. And you and me both know, Corinne, that he's secretly going to be hot. Or not even secretly, because this is a Hallmark movie. And just once, I would love to see an overweight guy in stained sweatpants with bad gingivitis and a receding hairline try to woo the girl.
You really?
Just once.
That's just my life. Come on. I don't think we need to see that. We watch Hallmark movies to escape.
Okay, granted. And maybe not the gingivitis because she is a dentist after all.
She could save him. She could heal his teeth.
She could tell him to floss. And Abby says, wow, that sounds so exciting that he goes all over the world and has all these adventures. And Elizabeth gets all reminiscy about how she used to dream about traveling and she always wanted to go to Europe and her parents tried planning a trip once, but they couldn't decide where to go, and she couldn't stand to see them argue, so she just asked to stay on the island with the Bellings family. And now it's too late, because apparently she's 100 years old and has her dental practice, and George is a huge stick in the mud who hates traveling or anything new.
I love the look that her bestie gets on her face when Elizabeth is talking about George, and it's this look of saying, I don't see it. You and George? Really? You've become less and less fun over the years under his influence. That's sort of like the look that traveled across her face that said so many words, but she didn't say anything.
Yes.
That's a good bestie for you. She kept those thoughts to herself.
I would have said something. I'm sorry, Corinne. If you've become less boring, I'm going to need to tell you about
it. If I become less boring, you're going to need to tell me about
if
it?
If you become...
Please do. Well, hey.
I'm sorry. If you become less interesting and more boring, I'm going to tell you about it. If I see you going down that boring spiral of shame, I'm going to have to let you know.
Thank you.
You're changing.
For the better, though.
You don't wear graphic tees like you used to.
But now I have a 401k, so there. Mm. So George and Elizabeth are out front of her house. George is impeccably Tetrising their luggage into the back of the SUV. Elizabeth brings up the possibility of doing a 6-week honeymoon in South America. She wistfully says, there's hiking and zip lining. It sounds amazing. George shuts that shit down, right down. It sounds exhausting, he says. Plus, we can't leave our patients for 6 weeks, and don't even get me started on how many people a year die from ziplining. I don't know how many people that is, but I'm sure it's a lot. I tried looking it up. I don't know either. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. There's no way to know.
And maybe that's better. Maybe it's better that we don't know.
If you have your own dental practice, you make your own schedule, you can schedule out a chunk of time to go travel. Come on now. It's not like you have a boss that you have to answer to.
It's true. But also, when you have your own practice, when you don't work, you don't get paid.
If they've been working as hard as they make it out, like they've been working for God knows how long and their practice is doing well, I'm sure they have some savings aside.
Yes. But that is for when they get old and gray. Old and very, very gray.
And can enjoy your money as much as you are when you're young and virile. Mm-hmm.
With Elizabeth's international travel dreams squashed, they head off to his mom's home on the very fictitious Echo Island. Before they get there, they stop at the Flying Otter Oyster Bar. This place is a bit of a legend on the island where they grew up, and she's been dying to try it. George is not thrilled. They only serve raw oysters, which can cause gastroenteritis.
Say that 5 times fast.
Gastroenteritis. Okay. Elizabeth assures him that they're here for the pie. Y'all, this place is my own personal version of hell. It's like a loud bar with raw oysters and clangy bells that get rung each time someone finishes 3 dozen oysters and wins a piece of free pie. No. Tamara's nodding her head, knowingly looking at me, knowing how I am with noise and whatnot. Oh.
I love a good piece of pie, but the last thing I usually want after eating 3 platters of oysters is a piece of pie.
I mean, it seems like it would make your tummy kind of like irpy mixing those two things together.
Yeah, it's like not the salty and sweet that I want in my life.
Mm-mm.
Clang, clang, clang!
Sandy, their server, who has a take-no-shit attitude, asks them what they want, and when George orders a water with lemon and Elizabeth orders a Chardonnay, which I did not know how to spell, she wonders why they wandered through the doors. Elizabeth wants some key lime pie, and Sandy, she is not having it. Apparently, you can't get a piece of pie unless you've eaten a platter of oysters. And I'm like, seriously? Can't she just pay for an overpriced piece of pie? Charge her for the oysters, give her a fucking piece of pie. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
To add insult to injury, the server returns with 2 beers and leaves them with the check. And I'm like, it's fine if they don't have wine, but really? Really? You can't give the man a water? I mean, come on. While I'd be saying, I'm await outside, Elizabeth is charmed by the raucous atmosphere, but is nonplussed at the end of their order. This adventure has not turned out like she expected. George asks to leave while Elizabeth looks back longingly at the delicious pieces of pie that are being served to joyous patrons.
God, can we just take a moment to talk about the horrible business model that this is? You don't, there's one thing on the menu that you get no matter what. Oh no, sorry, two things, oysters and beer. Are you a 12-year-old little girl? You get a beer. Are you a recovering alcoholic? You get a beer.
Yes.
Are you an intoxicated man that clearly needs to be cut off? Guess what? You get a beer.
Everyone, beers.
And then when they say something, she's like, go out to the burger shack up the way. And by the way, I know you didn't ask for beers, but I'm putting them down in front of you. And here's the bill. Like, what the hell? But it's a fun place. Clang, clang, clang. That's what the name, the bell sounds like, that every time somebody finishes a damn platter of oysters. Clang, clang, clang.
Okay, so I know that you are 100% more likely to go there than me, but how appealing is this place for you?
Oh my God, no. That waitress, if she did that to me, I mean, I am all about being kind to your servers, but honey, telling me to go elsewhere, not giving me what I want on the menu, and then in turn giving me something that I don't want, that I didn't ask for, and then charging me for it, like it's my fault for not wanting a beer in your establishment? Oh boy. Boy, 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 boy. I mean, I think maybe it's one of those establishments that's well known and notorious for being rude. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a gimmick, but I would be livid and probably curse and need to leave quickly before I said something rude to the equally rude waitress. They eventually get to George's beautiful childhood home, and right as they get out of the car, his phone rings. It's the office. It could be a dental emergency. He really wants to take it, but Elizabeth pleads with him not to. You will be on that phone for hours, and if it's so bad, they can call the on-call dentist that we arranged. Put the damn phone down. We are at your parents' house.
For real.
You could be here and present with me. Motherfucker.
Oh, and this movie has a fucking dead dad, too. Yay! But it's a Hallmark movie. All the parents die in Hallmark movies.
It's a double whammy. It doesn't make it any less dramatic. Oh. Dentists. Dead fathers. Dentists and dead fathers. He finally relents. He does not answer the phone. And they go inside where they're greeted by Luis, George's sister, who doesn't have time for pleasantries with George. She's too busy doing the very important task of looking for her keys.
Oh, welcome to my
and
life.
And he kind of like stands there with his arms open and is like, you can't give your big brother a hug? And she says, no, I'm sorry. And then Elizabeth walks in behind him and she very quickly says, but I'll give Elizabeth one, and goes and hugs Elizabeth, which I was like, what the heck is going on with that little dynamic there between them? George's mom also walks in. Diana comes in and everybody gets a hug from her. George's pesky phone rings again, and this time he takes it, ducking out, saying, I'll only be a minute, while Elizabeth chats with Diana, a.k.a. Ma Belling. What are all these boxes by your front door? There's a crap ton of boxes that are clearly labeled party decorations, and they got delivered that day by the very attentive mailman.
Ooh.
Who will come up later. Elizabeth is a little bit perturbed. This can't be. She gets out her checklist and, yep, these should have come tomorrow. What are they doing here today? There's the decorations for the engagement party, but, I mean, at least we're ahead of schedule. Ma Belling sees the checklist, takes it from her hand, and says, you are always so efficient and organized. And as she looks at the checklist, she sees very clearly the huge caption in bold that says, surprise party for Diana.
It's the only thing in bold on that list. Like, it's a list with timelines and everything listed out, and then the one thing in bold is surprise party.
I'm surprised it didn't have birthday cake clip art like around it. Just then Louise finds her keys and leaves. Mom's like, where are you off to? And she says, I have to go to the airport to pick up David. He's coming home after all.
Yeah.
Elizabeth seems flustered by this info, and Mama Diane explains that he's coming home for the surprise party that I'm not supposed to know about. Liz realizes that she let the cat out of the bag about the party, and Ma says, don't worry about it. I can act very surprised. Nobody will know. I was the star of many high school musicals back in my day. Oh, is this party for me? She acts out, and probably in a pinch, she can burst into a song if need be. A little while later, George and Elizabeth are alone in the living room, and she asked, how is your room? Which I think is so sad because they're engaged and they can't share a room together. They have to be in separate rooms.
It's Hallmark.
Rooms.
Nobody has sex in Hallmark movies. Separate rooms until
okay,
married.
Okay, so they can sleep together. Meh. Meh, meh, meh. Meh. Or just like maybe the 50s style, same room, separate beds. Separate twin beds, side by side.
Uh-huh.
No?
Yeah, that really keeps okay, people fine. From having sex.
I know. That's why I prefer it. It'd feel just like, you know, back in high school when you're trying to quietly feel each other up on a twin bed. Brings back all kinds of memories. George says, yeah, my mom practically kept my room as is. It's like being in a museum. And Liz is like, yeah, remember my funky house across the street? That was way worse than this. That's why I always loved coming here growing up. You all were always so kind and welcome, and there's always something fun going on here, like all those scavenger hunts your mom used to have. We should do that for our engagement party, George. Doesn't that sound like fun? And he says, no. We're adults, after all, and I hate fun. Okay, he didn't say that, but I did.
A scavenger hunt sounds fun. What the heck, man?
I know. I've never done a scavenger hunt at a party. I want to. So somebody invite me to a party and have a scavenger hunt, pretty please.
Will do.
Thanks. Just then, Elizabeth looks out the window and notices that the treehouse is still up that George's father built. George gets a little emotional, and by a little, I mean a really, really little tiny bit, because apparently he's a robot.
He's very reserved.
Reserved is an understatement. Cold might be a little bit more accurate. Elizabeth coaxes him and says, it's okay to talk about your father, George. And he says, it feels like he was just there. I wish he could have seen me and all the success that I'm having. And this is where they should have hugged it out, or at least snuck off to some dark closet and felt each other mm-hmm. up. But nope, this is a Hallmark movie, so no warmness and or feelsies.
The next morning, Elizabeth wakes up and goes down to the kitchen dressed for spring in her black skinny jeans and her white flowy blouse with a French tuck. Louise is in the kitchen and they chat amiably.
Amiably.
Amiably. And they chat amiably. There's a knock at the kitchen door, and the mail carrier, Eugene, just lets himself in. Suddenly, the crowd goes wild because it's Nelson Wong. Yay! So exciting.
And crowd meaning Corinne.
Eugene has a package and mail to deliver. He also has this message to deliver to Louise. I'd like to say that he did it singing telegram style, but that would be a lie.
You want him to do a singing telegram, and I want him to walk in and be like, I have a package for you. Right here in my
Eugene.
Truck.
You're so naughty. Shall I unwrap it now?
If you must.
Instead, he let her know that a band that she likes is playing at the brewery and asks if she'd like to go. Louise brushes him off with barely a glance, and as soon as he leaves, Elizabeth gives her the hubba hubba elbow elbow look. Louise asks her, what's that look for? Elizabeth responds, he likes you. Louise says that it's Eugene's job to like people. And Elizabeth states what everyone else can see, that Eugene has heart eyes for Louise. He could be your soulmate. He could complete you. Elizabeth dreamily says, Louise, feeling beleaguered after two broken engagements, says, I think a soulmate is someone who inspires you to complete yourself. And I say, yes, Louise, yes. This is actually one of the nice aphorisms or whatever in a Hallmark movie. Usually they give horrible advice like, when you know, great stuff like that.
Words of wisdom. Words to live by.
Words of wisdom. Your turn. Their conversation ends, and we move on to the next scene.
Oh, God. I'm sorry. I was in the wrong spot. She kept saying she was too busy to go out with Eugene, but she was just, like, busily arranging flowers in a vase.
She's got art to create, Tamara. I don't think you understand, okay? She's an award-winning artist, and she has to paint.
Okay. I will move on then to the next section that I call What the Fuck, Elizabeth. She walks into the ice cream parlor to pick up ice cream for soon-to-be mother-in-law's surprise birthday party and gives the clerk behind the counter the most ridiculous order. 3 pints of vanilla ice cream, 1 pint separated into 2 half pints, and 1 pint separated into 2 containers, the first with 1/4 full and the other 3/4 full. Some chocolate separated into 2 separate cups, and 3 pints of strawberry served the same way as the vanilla. She gives the clerk a list that's typed in double space, which is helpful, but Elizabeth, don't be a dick. I'm curious to know what the special concoction that she has planned with these crazy measurements, but honestly, the least she could have done is give that poor kid behind the counter a break, got the pints as they were, and asked for extra containers, and did her crazy separation at home herself.
Okay, so I did some thinking on this.
Mm-hmm, okay.
So the reason
I'm dying to know.
The reason why she needs them separated so specifically into the different types of containers is that the containers are going to be brought out at different times. This will keep all the ice cream from melting. So you start off with like a heavier container of ice cream, but then if that one gets depleted, then you can bring out the one with just a little bit of ice cream because people are going to be eating it less. So you have more frozen ice cream over time. It's genius, right?
No. No, I'm still very upset about this order because I have worked in food service industry and retail, and oh my God, I have seen so many people be ridiculous and rude, and this just like pulled all of those triggers where I was like, Elizabeth?
If I was in that situation with the whole ice cream, oh, that wouldn't have been good.
Oh no. That poor kid handles it very graciously.
He does.
He's just like, okay. I'm going to have been giving her some serious side eye, like, serious lady. And what if I don't measure it exactly a third and three-fourths? What happens then? Are you going to come back? Are you going to throw it in my face?
Yes.
Probably. That's what I imagine would happen. Just as she's finishing up, a man behind her asked for a pint of the chocolate belly booster. And I had to rewind it because I'm like, belly booster, not belly buster. Is that supposed to be some like healthy ice cream version or something? Belly booster.
I think we all need a little belly boost every now and then.
If it's in an ice cream and you can eat it and it does something to your stomach that's beneficial, I'm all about it. Elizabeth hears his voice and recognizes it as David, the freewheeling, long-lost brother back from his latest adventure. She says hi and he says, bring it in, and gathers her in for a hug, which she's clearly uncomfortable getting. And she's like, well, how's it feel to be home? And he said he's excited and can't wait to catch up with everyone. And by the way, how did my brother George pop the question to you? And Liz tells him the very uber romantic story of being in the break room at work in their offices, both realizing that they get along really well, they're so similar, and the practice is doing great. So it seemed like the logical thing to do was get married.
Mm-hmm.
Swoon. Swoon, swoon.
That's like my aunt and uncle's proposal story where they went on a hike in the redwoods. They saw two banana slugs doing it and they were like, maybe we should get married. My family is known for its very unromantic proposals.
I would have to say that banana slugs doing it in the forest is way more romantic than sitting at a break room in a dentist office and being like, you want to get married? Yeah. How about you? Yeah. Okay, let's do it. David nods and says, wow, that's really sensible. And Elizabeth thanks him and says, I'm glad you understand, David. Not everything has to be a romance novel. Are you going to be staying long? And he says, I'm just staying till after the engagement dinner. All my students in Mumbai will be missing me, so I have to hurry back. The ice cream is ready. David tries to pay, but as he pulls everything out of his pocket, he realizes that all he has are rupees and yen, which surprisingly the ice cream place does not take. Elizabeth notices the very pristine, very clean, very white rabbit's foot that he has on his keychain and says, oh, is that for good luck? And he says, well, actually, no. Even though this white foot looks immaculate and super clean, I put that in there myself, it's actually 20 years old. I stole it from you. When you got me thrown out of the theater one time for talking, you used to carry this around your backpack all the time in middle school. And after you got me thrown out, it fell off your bag while I was being accosted by security for disrupting the movie. I was going to give it back to you. But then I thought, nah. And I've kept it this whole time. Elizabeth is taken aback and says, wow, David, I am so sorry I annoyed you that day. And he said, well, annoyed is a strong word, but, you know, you used it. Did you have any feelings about that rabbit foot being, like, fucking beautiful?
I actually think that, like, the fur is designed so it doesn't really get, like, all that messed up. But I will say that, oh, look, she's giving me the eyes, ladies and gentlemen.
I am cocking my head so painfully to the
her
side.
Her eyebrows are like raised up like she's gotten Botox. For me, my feelings on the rabbit foot are, do you remember when we were kids and rabbit's feet were considered lucky and we just like thought they were so cool and different ones were all these neon colors and stuff like that?
It's so disturbing.
It's so gross. It's so disturbing. What the heck? We were like running around with little rabbit's paws that we were thinking were so awesome. It's just gross. Why?
I'm going to die on this hill. That white rabbit's foot would not be that clean and pristine after he's been carrying it all over the world for 20 years. I'm just saying.
I agree. I agree. You got me. You got me. I was just more affected by the fact that he was carrying around a rabbit's foot.
I know. The poor little foot of rabbit.
That poor little three-footed rabbit. David and Elizabeth leave the ice cream shop and walk down the street. David good-naturedly invites Elizabeth to remind him of all the times he was a pest. Elizabeth righteously reminds David all the ways he acted like a brat, like July 4th, 1997, when he ate her fries and stole her soda.
Tam's like wagging her head, no.
I can't believe that she's still disgruntled over that crap, seriously?
It was one of the many, many reasons why he was such a pain.
We've heard legitimate reasons for people to be mad at each other in Hallmark movies, and these, all of them, all the things that she listed, did not sound like, no. They were just not valid, good reasons to have so much hate in her heart towards David.
I would say it's irritation. Irritation in her heart towards David. He responds similarly to Tamara. Just a thought. 1997, that was. Maybe you should let that one go. They part ways and Elizabeth takes her carefully curated ice cream back to the house before it melts. And Tamara still
did
can't
I ever
believe.
Tell you? I know. Nope. Nobody, nope, nope. Did I ever tell you that one time my mom and my aunt, both before they passed away, had like a very dysfunctional relationship and they were very much at odds and just did not get along. And before my mom passed away, we actually got them together in the same room to have lunch together.
Wow.
And they were kind of airing their grievances.
Oh,
and one
like
of the things that they got
July
into like...
July 4th, 1997.
Yes, 100%. They were talking about a doll that you had that I wanted that you didn't give me. And I was like, seriously, 50 some odd years, you guys aren't going to talk because of crap like this. Mm-hmm. Life is too short.
Oh, for real. I had an aunt who passed as well, and she would bring up slights against her from childhood as well. And I was like, yeah, how old are you? Seriously?
Yeah.
Me and my sister did not get along when we were growing up. She did not treat me well, and I was a bratty little sister, and yet I managed to not live in that at all. It's totally fine, you know?
Yeah. Some of the things my sister did or had done, like, I laugh about it now, and I'm like, you evil genius. Damn it. The stuff you came up with is, like, legendary.
Whew. Later that day, everybody is in the house. Hide for the surprise, people, hide. Everybody gets tucked away, and like clockwork, Diana, a.k.a. Mom, walks through the door. Surprise! Everyone yells. Well, bless my stars and garters, I am so surprised. Somebody told her, Louise and George say almost simultaneously. Elizabeth is about to fess up when David says, it was me. Louise and George give him the steely eye, but people start to mingle and Elizabeth approaches David. I was going to admit it. You don't have to be the fall guy. He looks at her with a sly smile and responds, so it was you. Naughty.
He knew.
He knew. He knew.
He knew. He totally knew.
And walks off. Elizabeth looks stunned at his response. She shakes her fist at him internally and says deep inside, why you? Later, Elizabeth goes off to find George, who had walked off to take a phone call. She finds him looking upset. A patient needs emergency dental work and due to previous dental trauma. Oof. I do know about that. I've had my fair share of dental trauma. He is the only one that the patients trust. He promises he'll only be gone the night and ditches his mom's party, to drive back.
His like mom's
he,
party!
He can't stay for his mom's party and leave afterwards? No. He ditches his mom's party to drive back home.
I'm just shaking my head vigorously because fuck that.
He promises he'll only be gone the night and ditches his mom's party to drive back home so he can be fresh for an early morning appointment. He gives Elizabeth the driest of pecks on the cheek, rips off his glasses and his suit, and exposes his super dentist outfit. Sadly, he can't fly as his superpower is being a really good dentist, but he rushes around in record time, ditching his mom's party and heading out the door.
God, I used to be in that camp. Like, I used to be, seriously, when my work said jump, I said, how high?
Mm-hmm.
And now in hindsight, I'm like, that was no way to be. Mm-hmm. Like, that is no way to live.
It's, yeah.
They don't care about you as much as you care about them. So, like, take a beat and take some time for yourself there, dear George.
For real. And also, you know, people have their own choices that they can make. So she can choose whether or not she goes to a different dentist to get that taken care of, or she decides to wait in pain until a week later. That is up to her. He's not uh-huh. super dentist.
Advil and Tylenol, honey. Take them together. It works wonders.
We are not suggesting that you take Advil and Tylenol together. We are not a medical podcast.
Unless you're extreme pain. Okay, I'm just suggesting it worked for me. I'm not saying you do it, but when you have a dental procedure that's very painful, Advil and Tylenol worked for me. One Dry Kiss does not condone this medical advice. It's given by Cameron and Corinne that are not doctors.
Yes. Perfect.
George leaves that night, as Corinne said, to go run to his practice and help his poor patient who's in pain. He passes David on his way out, and David says, "Hey, man, drive safe. There's a storm a-coming." And George tells David, "You got it, and you hold down the fort because I'm being such a wussy and leaving. So make sure everybody has a good time because I'm out."
We all know what's important. It's patience, not family. Patience.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. David follows him to his car and says, "By the way, George, I read that super technical article that you wrote about the thing with the teeth and the procedures and whatnot. It was so interesting, and I was so proud of you." And George looks at him and shakes his head and says, "You didn't understand anything in that paper, did you?" And David says, "Why, no, but that still doesn't discount that I am so proud of you for writing it."
I love that David read that article that his brother published in the dental magazine. I thought that was really sweet. The way he referred to it, you could obviously tell that he had read it, even though he didn't understand any of it.
Absolutely, and I did not care enough to write down exactly how he said it, but that is totally true. George says, "You know what, David? I'm proud of you, too. I envy the way you can just pick up, live day by day." David's very surprised to hear this and says, "Bro, where do you want to go? I'll book the tickets right now. Let's travel together." And George scoffs. And David says, "Well, why not?" And George admits, "That's just the thing. I'm not the why not kind of guy. I'm the guy that asks why." And with that, the brotherly love moment is over, and George heads out into the night.
It's 2 a.m., and Elizabeth was sleeping, but she got woken up. What's that? It sounds like her room is above a club as a thump, thump, thump of music comes up through the floor. She whips off her eye mask and dashes downstairs to get to the bottom of this mystery. How do we know this isn't a documentary? Because if it was, she'd have gone to the bathroom before she headed down those stairs. As anyone who gets woken up in the middle of the night knows, that regardless, as soon as you stand, you're like, "Whoa! Uh-oh."
Are you projecting a little bit there, Corinne?
I don't know what you're talking about. No. I don't need to go to the bathroom like 4 times during the night. I'm fine.
Okay, just checking.
Uh-huh. Bladder of steel over here. Not really, but you know, one can dream. She flies downstairs to witness David rocking out in the kitchen using a wooden spoon as a guitar, wireless speaker booming away. He offers her cake, calls her tense when she says no, and grabs her some apology milk from the fridge. He's sorry, but still on Tibetan time. That does not mean that you should be blasting music while people are sleeping. Seriously? Come on now. Anyways.
Is Mumbai in Tibet? I thought. I never knew. I'm not super good at geography,
India. India.
Tibetan time?
No. Mumbai is not in Tibet.
Thank God. I thought I was just really bad at geography for a second.
They might be in the same time zone. I don't know.
Okay. We'll go with that.
I have not looked at a map. I'm sorry. I'm a dumb American.
The only thing that matters is America.
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 Or in Hallmark movies, Americanada. David is so infuriating. He continues flitting around, dancing to music, and she continues chasing him with spoon in hand. "I do not want to dance, David. I don't want peanut butter cake. I just want quiet so I can get my 8 1/4 hours of sleep." "There's peanuts in that?" David starts hacking and falls down on the ground dramatically and is still. Elizabeth, freaking out, dashes towards him. "Are you okay? Wake up. Wake up," she says, lightly slapping his face. "Shh," he says, "I'm trying to sleep." Enough. Elizabeth is done. She doesn't like being tricked, and she doesn't like rule breakers. If she had her way, she'd split the house down the middle with tape, but the family might be put off by that. "Here's what we're going to do, David," she says through gritted teeth. "We're going to be like two ships passing in the night. Passing in the night." And with that, She storms back up into bed, but with all that righteous indignation and adrenaline, I doubt she got much sleep.
You know David wanted her to come downstairs. You know it. Of all the places that he could have listened to his music or used headphones, he was just trying to coax her downstairs.
Siren song.
What about that cool-ass treehouse that's outside the window? You could have listened to your music there, David. The next day, George is trying to get back across the bridge, but he's stopped by a construction crew. The island is closed. There was a lightning strike on the bridge. And seriously, Corinne, do you really think there's not another way to get across that island?
That's what I'm saying. Like, there's no ferry. There's no anything.
Yes.
Come on.
Charter boat? Rowboat, for God's sake!
I know, it does not look that far. Swim? Just put on a wetsuit. You'll walk across.
Some waders? Jesus. The guy blocking the way tells him it could be a few days or a couple of weeks. They just won't know until they inspect the damage. And George argues that he needs to be on that side of the bridge. I have wedding planning to do with my wife, or my soon-to-be wife, which just reinforces my belief that this island is large enough that if it has venues and ice cream shops, that there should have an alternate route to get into town. But the guy says, sorry, buddy, you're just going to have to make your plans on this side of the bridge. Meanwhile, back at the familial house, David and Elizabeth encounter each other outside by the bay. While they're having their morning coffee, David knows that Liz is still sore about the night before, so he decides to ignore her and have a friendly convo with the dog, Tilly, that's right there by their feet. He says, good morning, Tilly, how are you? Well, I'm good, thank you for asking. How did you sleep last night? Oh, well, I slept good. Oh, Tilly, stop saying that about Elizabeth. She's right there. She can hear you.
The dog makes little, like, sounds, though.
Elizabeth is giving him some serious side eye, but just then George calls and informs Liz about his predicament over on the other side of the bridge. Liz hangs up and is rattled and asks David, did you know about the lightning on the bridge? And he shrugs and says, yeah. She's like, why didn't you tell me? And he says, because you said we're like two ships passing in the night and ships don't talk to each other.
Pom, pom, pom.
Elizabeth leaves in a huff. She still has a lot to do. And since George is stuck on the other side of the water, she has to take a stroll into town to get her shit taken care of. It looks like it's about to rain any minute as she's walking down the side of the road until David pulls up in his pickup truck and offers her a ride. And she says, nope. I'm good, very flippantly. He tries to convince her. She keeps saying no. And he finally offers, I know that George has your car. You're marrying him. We're going to be family. So how about for his sake, we call a truce? And she agrees to the truce and the ride, but says under one condition. When I go to all my wedding planning stuff, you stay in the car. Now, here's my hallmarked beef.
Oh.
Why the hell is she walking down the side of the road if Louise and Ma Belling are, quote-unquote, helping her with her wedding planning? Why is she on her own and has to be rescued by David? Like, seriously, you know they're not anywhere. The bridge is out. Louise sure as hell doesn't have a job. She's an artist that just moved home. Like, what the hell?
That's what I hallmarked because I'm like, what the happened?
Rage, sparks flying out of my head. I can't believe it.
On a different note, I have to say that the truck game in Hallmark movies is strong. That's a cute truck that he was driving.
Corinne, don't dismiss my feelings, so jump in my pool of anger. Tell me what you think about these absent family members that should really be at least giving her a ride.
They needed to do it for the plot device. So, you know, they totally should have been helping her. You're totally right. And I choose to ignore it.
The Hallmark universe is a fickle, fickle bitch.
Uh-huh. And now for another episode of ODK Theater. Thank you, Tamara, for joining me.
You're welcome, Corinne.
Today, Tamara, you're going to be David. My notes are simple and direct. Channel thoughtful with a smidge of mischievous. You will also be Sylvia, the ever cheerful employee at the cake shop. We open on a cake shop With exposed brick walls and floor-to-ceiling windows, it has an understated 6 chandeliers hanging from the ceiling, along with a couple of very tasteful white ceramic greyhound sculptures. The room is populated with various pedestal tables with multi-tiered cakes upon each one. This is the place cake dreams are made of. Elizabeth walks the room with Sylvia. This isn't so much a cake tasting as a moment for Elizabeth to detail what she already knows she wants. Who needs to test a variety of different cakes when you know you want vanilla? Meh. Elizabeth, as you can see from my diagrams, I want a 6-tier monochromatic cake with sugar petals down the side and a single sugar pearl at the tip of each leaf.
Lovely. We can absolutely do that for you.
David enters the cake shop and immediately picks up the plate of white cake samples and starts munching on them.
Hello, sir. I'll be with you shortly.
Take your... Sorry.
Nom, 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 nom. Take your time.
Nice, David. I like. Elizabeth rotates slowly. Her internal dialogue goes, "Oh, no." Her external dialogue goes, "What are you doing? You were supposed to wait outside." And now she gestures wildly at him. "You're here. Please sit down and try not to interrupt."
Totally. Yeah, I'm quite content to sit here and munch on these cake samples. Take your time,
he says with a playful grin. She turns back to Sylvia. So sorry, Sylvia. I listened to my heart and it said to me, vanilla cake. And what can I say? The heart wants what the heart wants. So I'll go with the vanilla cake. All vanilla, nothing but vanilla. If I had to name this cake, it would be Vanilla Elegance.
That is a lot of vanilla, and I'm not just talking about in this movie.
There's a lot of white people in this movie. So much vanilla. Elizabeth, turning back towards David, did you say something?
Nope. You were saying how fond you were of vanilla. Imagine, if you will, a world where only vanilla exists. No mint chip, coffee, rocky road. In a vanilla world, there'd be no explanation. In a vanilla world, there'd be no exploration, no oceans crossed, no mountains climbed, no... Don't mind me, perhaps I'm being dramatic.
This is cake, not intentional exploration. Hey!
We're killing it today.
I know. This is cake, not international exploration or new discoveries in science. My wedding cake.
Totally, totally. Look, I'm zipping my mouth, zip, and throwing it in the
Elizabeth goes back to Sylvia, but there's something that's bothering her. It's David and his judgment, and she's not going to let it rest. You think vanilla is dull? Flavorless? Anticlimactic, if you will?
It's plain, it's safe.
He pulls out a chalkboard out of nowhere and starts writing and diagramming all the times that she's played it safe as he continues to talk.
For years, I've known you. You tend to play it safe. Perhaps it's because you want people to think you're dependable, a safe person, but deep down.
And for this one, he pulls out the colored chalk and starts drawing a giant ice cream bowl with chocolate, strawberry, and vanilla ice cream in it. It is a sight to behold, David continues.
I think you're actually a Neapolitan ice cream sundae with sprinkles. Maybe even a little, cherry on top. If you just let go once in a while, you might discover you are not vanilla at all.
Sylvia, let's go with the vanilla.
You got it.
And with that, we close the curtains on another ODK theater.
That was our clunkier one, but I loved it.
On the ride home, Elizabeth is reflective. You think I'm dull and that my life with George is basic and boring? David responds, I think you're rich and interesting, but yes, you and George are the people that hold things down so us crazies can act out.
Did he really say that, or was that your interpretation?
No, he actually said that.
Okay. Sorry, I thought that was your interpretation. Good writing. No. Good writing in this movie.
I know. There's a couple of lines in here that sound like my interpretation, but are actual writing. And then there's a lot of lines in here that are mine. Elizabeth vulnerably responds, "Maybe I get tired of being so responsible, so vanilla. Maybe I want to be chocolate and strawberry too." And with that encouragement, David flips the truck around and says, "Hold on, Magellan, you're about to discover a whole new world." In the 90s, that would have involved a flying carpet and some dramatic music. In the early 2000s, it would have involved ecstasy and acid. Now it would be ayahuasca and Burning Man. But this is a Hallmark movie, so they're off to the flying otter.
I felt a little bit bad for Elizabeth in this detour to the flying otter because she said she wanted to be strawberry or chocolate flavored, and honey, you ain't going to be nothing here but oyster flavored because that's all they serve.
And beer.
Oh, and beer. Beer or oyster flavored, take your pick. They get into the flying otter, and David asks if she's been there before, and she says, "Yeah, once." And the most unyielding waitress, Sandy, comes by. And David says, "Sandy, Elizabeth, Elizabeth, Sandy." And they both begrudgingly say, "We've met," at the same time. They get their platters of oysters and they start slurping them down. Elizabeth thinks they're disgusting, but she wants, no, she needs that bell to ring. They have a little mini oyster eating montage. They play some kicky music, and in the end, Elizabeth finally gets her key lime pie.
Yay!
This put me in mind, Corinne, of the worst piece of key lime pie that we ever had at that little place in Santa Cruz that we went to last year.
Oh my god, that was so gross. We didn't eat, like, we just had a bite, and we were like, okay, done now.
I know. Usually we're, like, battling forks over food when we share something, and, like, trying to beat each other to every single crumb, and we're both just looking at the pie going, are you gonna eat that? No, are you gonna eat that? And finally we both realized,
no,
oh,
it's
all
you.
It's disgusting. I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you take it. No, please. No, you, not you. And apparently this pie is in a different category because she will eat disgusting, quote unquote, which I love, so don't quote me on that, oysters, in order to get this lovely piece of key lime pie. Elizabeth takes her first bite of the deliciousness and gets some whipped cream on her lip, and David, very seductively for a Hallmark movie, wipes it off. Lizzie is shocked at this and does a piss poor job of covering it. David gazes at her and says, "It's so weird, you and George." And Lizzie says, "Yep, that's happening." Like she's trying to convince herself or David or both.
Oh.
She says, "What about you? Haven't you ever been in love, David?" And he admits he's never stayed in one place long enough to. But Elizabeth remembers Melanie Greenberg. "You used to love Melanie Greenberg, didn't you, David?" And he looks up whimsically and says, "Oh, yes. All those years ago. All her braces and my poor little lips. They were never the same after her." And Elizabeth says, "No, I'm serious. Don't you want to get married and have kids? It's the circle of life." She practically shoves a lion cub up in the air and sings the song, but circle be damned.
I was surprised that they included a reference to a makeout sesh with sixth graders in a Hallmark movie.
Mm-hmm. I know, scandalous.
Super scandalous.
Ooh. But circles and scandals be damned. The music is playing. And David needs to dance. He coaxes Elizabeth to the dance floor, where she does some very lip-biting, hip-thrusting, arm-convulsing bad dancing. And David squints his eyes and says, "It's like an eclipse that I can't look away from." And then her phone rings. It's George, of course. And David says, "Don't answer it. You were just getting into it." And she picks up the phone and hits the ignore call button. And he says, "Oh my God, I can't believe you just did that." And she screams, "You told me to." And he's like, "I know. How does it feel?" And she says, "I feel like a rule breaker." And just like that, the shoe is on the other foot. And they take that shoe and they keep on dancing.
Dancing, yeah. And now we return to the odd but lovable courtship of Eugene and Louise. Louise is in her studio painting water lilies when Eugene knocks on the door and asks if he can come in. Do I find it odd that there's a mail carrier lurking around in people's backyards? Yes. But am I okay with it because I love Eugene and his adorable self? Also yes. She takes a step back from her painting and asks him what he thinks. He compliments her reflections of the water and stirs up his courage. "So, the other day I saw you were painting some mallards, and then I remember the Dad had a mallard decoy," and he pulls out a life-size wooden mallard from his bag. "And I thought that maybe it could keep you company and inspire you." She seems genuinely delighted, and with that, Eugene is off to deliver some more mail with a little extra hop and a skip in his step.
You know there's a hidden camera in that mallard's mouth. cyber-stalking her. Strategically placed it behind her.
He's like, finally I can keep my eye on her while she paints.
And I just have to point out, yet again, in the Hallmark universe, where there is a very bad painting or quote-unquote art that everyone's like gushing, oh, it's so great. Oh, I love what you did with the reflections. And it looks like a bunch of smears on a canvas. But that's just me.
I thought it was very Monet, so that was fine. And it was water lily, so that's totally on theme. And it actually looked like a painting. So I give it points because it looked like a painting instead of a Photoshop with a paint filter on top of it.
Oof. You are so much more generous than me. I am more particular with my art.
I've seen so many of these with their so-called paintings that are completely not even close to looking like a painting. I take what I can get.
Okay, I have not been numb to it yet, so I'm calling it out.
While this is going on, Elizabeth delivers a casserole to Grandma Vivian that Diana made. Grandma Vivian invites Elizabeth in for tea, and ever the grandma, to share what's on her mind, she calls George a nincompoop for leaving Elizabeth. And I totally agree, Grandma.
Mm-hmm.
Why, if I were a young man and I saw you, I'd sweep you off your feet and never leave your side. Elizabeth delightedly responds, is that what Grandpa Lou did? Did he sweep you off your feet? Ha! Says Grandma Vivian, I'm going to tell you a secret, but don't you spill it like you did with Diana's surprise party. I had a boyfriend before Lou. We were amazing together, perfectly in sync, but blah. Who wants to marry someone who is just like you? I didn't know we were lacking until I met Lou. He challenged me, and because he was so obviously flawed, I felt I could be my beautiful, flawed self as well. We also had this great connection. We used to call it that zing, or as I like to say, zazazoo. You gotta have your zazazoo. It's either there or it's not. When we'd dance, I'd go weak in the knees, just like you and David. Elizabeth, who had been staring at Grandma Vivian, enchanted during the story, suddenly hears a record scratch and responds quickly, George? You mean like me and George? Grandma Vivian, pretending senility, says, oh yeah, that's what I said. Brings her teacup up to her lips and does a little shifty look. She has planted the seeds. Now the question is, will they grow? Is there zing between her and George? Or is it David who she has the zazazoo with?
Maybe we'll find out in the next scene where Elizabeth's in the study, slowly spinning a globe around. David comes in and says, every time I come here, it reminds me of my dad. He used to sit in that chair and read. And Elizabeth remembers fondly and says, those were some of my best memories. David stands beside her and also starts spinning the globe and naming off places around the world. And Lizzie asks, is that how you do it? You just point to a place and go? And he says, well, it's a good start, isn't it? She says, does it ever feel like there's a part of you missing? David admits, yeah. Sometimes when I'm far away, I dream of home and I long for the loved ones I left behind. And he looks at her pointedly and says, that's why you're lucky, Lizzie. You have that someone who makes your heart whole. You can sometimes travel the world and still not find what you and George have. David beelines to a bookshelf and pulls out a book which contains a piece of paper and laughs. It's still here after all these years. You have to come check this out. He pulls out the piece of paper and it's a bucket list written by little Lizzie back when she was a kid of all the places she wanted to go in Rome. She smiles and says, I always thought I'd get there, but then my parents got divorced. Because apparently when her parents got divorced, her whole life ended and she could not leave the country after that. David says, but what's stopping you now? And she says, I can't see that happening now. And he says, maybe there's a piece of your heart missing too. The part that was that little girl that wrote that note. She looks surprised and says, I have to call George. And David leaves her to it. He wanders out to Louise's studio, and she asks, where have you been? Apparently, they were going to have a painting date together because he gets a canvas and some brushes and says, I was hanging out with Lizzie inside the house. And she smiles and says, it's nice that you guys are getting along. You seem to bring out a little something different in her. She's lighter, less Elizabeth and more Lizzie. It's a shame you guys took so long to get along. Maybe that's what Grandma's talking about. You guys have that zing. Apparently, everybody in the family's trying to get them together except for them too. David says, no, that's what our grandparents have. We don't have that zing. George and Elizabeth, now they have a zing, I guess. They're perfect for each other.
I think they have an ing. There's
an
no
ing without the zzz.
Yeah, there's no yeah. Z in their relationship.
Yeah. Absolutely. Maybe even an in. An ing with yeah. no G. It's not even that. But David sadly looks out the window a little bit more heartbroken than he was when he came in.
Oh. We now continue the ongoing saga of the burgeoning love of Louise and Eugene. Later that evening, Louise and Elizabeth are cleaning up after dinner. There's a knock on the kitchen door, and it's Eugene! Elizabeth notes that he's working late and therefore must be tired and obviously in need of coffee. Eugene looks a little puzzled, but when Louise offers him a cup, yeah, that'd be great, he says with a look of hope on his face. When Louise is prompted to offer him a piece of pie, he looks even more happy. Finally, the two get a moment together. Here's his chance to make his mark. He takes a bite of apple pie and says to Elizabeth, "You made this?" Elizabeth immediately responds, "Oh no, that was all Louise." And Eugene says with hearts in his eyes and a great deal of sincerity, "I think this is the best pie I've ever tasted." Louise blushes and has butterflies, and Elizabeth excuses herself as she has no desire to be the third wheel. I like to think they continue to chat companionably, and then Louise keeps him company while he finishes his mail route. They end up happy, gazing at the stars on the beach, leaning against each other, holding hands, and sharing their hopes and dreams.
The love tractor beam has been engaged.
It has been engaged. We now resume our regularly scheduled romance, where Elizabeth is trying to talk to George, who thinks the dental assistant Denise is hilarious, playing a prank with mouthwash in the fridge. The connection is bad. I know. So funny.
Honey.
The connection is bad, and Elizabeth, frustrated and a little sad, gets off the phone and wanders into the family's game room, where David is watching a Western. She sits poised on the edge of the couch, like she wants to say something, but hasn't worked up the courage to. David, sensing this vibe, says, "Would you like to watch something else?" And Elizabeth, casually, hashtag not casually, says, "There's a dating show that I'm interested in." David, much to my surprise, says, "We can watch. How about it?" Gestures towards the remote, and the TV changes to a man making a romantic speech to the woman he's in front of. "You gotta be kidding me," says David. "That's not romance." "Oh yeah? What's romantic then?" retorts Elizabeth. "Don't you come for me," he says, his mouth full of popcorn. "I'm the most romantic guy you've ever met. I'd take the object of my affections onto a boat at sunset. I take her in my arms and say to her, all I love, all I ever need is you. Without you, my love, I am lost. Every time I look at you, I'm breathless." Elizabeth looks at him, her face softening. "Every time I hold you in my arms, I feel like I'm home. I loved you yesterday. I love you today. I'll love you tomorrow." They stare at each other, and a silence falls between them. And then we cut to the next scene.
There is nothing sexier than a man who's willing to give up the remote.
That's what I'm saying. Forget about this poorly written love script. The remote, I'm all for. But I gotta say, Ty Ty delivers those lines beautifully. Oh, Ty Ty.
I think you're impartial to Ty Ty.
I don't know what you're talking
He's
about.
He's your June swoon. You know you creamed your jeans a little bit when you said those lines.
Ew. That's got to be like one of my least favorite sayings ever. So
I was like, oh. Okay, I'm sorry. Take it back. Creamed your chonies.
Right. Yeah, that's so much better. Uh-huh. Sure.
Elizabeth, wandering around outside, finds David being uber cool, strumming a guitar, instead of whistling, up in the treehouse. And Elizabeth asks, "What you doing?" And he says, "I'm serenading myself. Would you care to join me so it's less sad?" And she says, "No, thank you. I just came out here to ask if you could drive me into town. I have more wedding stuff to do." And he says, "Only if you come up here." And she says, "No way. My mom never let me..." And I was like, "Lady, how old are you? Like, your mom didn't want you to go up there once upon a time, so then it's like forbidden for all till the end of days?"
Absolutely. Once forbidden, always forbidden. That's why I can't go into your apartment.
And I still have problems going into your parents' backyard. Like, we're going to go have a picnic in the backyard. And I'm like, oh, there's like a force field.
can't get past.
That was just a sidebar, because growing up, Corinne's parents never let me go into their house or their backyard.
And I wasn't allowed to go in that, into Tamara's house either. So, yeah. Good times.
Probably good. We would have caused a ruckus. We would have done some kid things.
I would have ended up getting you into trouble. I know, for sure. Oh, that would have been bad.
I could have got you into trouble, too. I might have gotten you in trouble.
You were much
I had a bad
kid
bone in my body somewhere.
Than I was.
Because I had the fear of my father in me. Okay, so she doesn't go up in the secret force field treehouse because mom forbid it way back in the day.
Oh, and by the way, this treehouse is fucking amazing.
I know. As soon as I turned 18, I'd be like, okay, I can vote now. Check. Okay, I'm going to go get my driver's license that says I'm 18 now. Check. Okay, and I'm going up that fucking treehouse because mom can't tell me different now.
I'd be like, I'm moving in now. Thank you. It looks like a full-on house. It has a rooftop balcony. I mean, it's got everything. I wouldn't be surprised if it had plumbing. It's a gorgeous.
Nope. You know what it doesn't have, though?
You.
It doesn't have a good ladder to get up there.
Oh, no. That ladder is... Oh, no. I'm like, you invested all that money in a treehouse? You got that crap ladder? Are you kidding
me? If you live there, you know I'd be like, right... You'd come home and I'd just be like sprawled out on the couch in the living area and like, hey, how's it going? It's time to podcast, right? That's why I'm here. He takes her to another wedding area, swanky shop, to do a gift registry. And they're both armed and ready with their scanny guns. And David says, I don't understand this. You have to make a list of a list for people to buy you things? And she says, it's because you can get what you really want. And he picks up a fish plate and says, this is what I really want. She looks peeved. And he says, no. He walks over to the other side of the store and says, I'm going to get you this. Beelines to a bevy of golden flying pig sculptures on the wall. And says, this is what little Lizzie would have gotten. You used to find joy in all the little things. And she's just like, what would I do with golden pig sculptures? And he's like, you used to like the craziest things. Remember the ring Louise gave you? You didn't even care about the pearl ring inside. You were so enchanted with that little box that she gave with it. And Lizzie says, yeah, because she decorated it herself. It was a thing of beauty. And it had unicorns all over it. And I still believed in unicorns. I actually saved that box for years, even though I don't know what happened to the ring. Lizzie says, but now I'm all grown up and people change. And David says, well, I'm going to hold on to the memory of that little girl who believed in unicorns. She turns and goes off to the toaster ovens while David stealthily scans one of the golden pigs to put on her registry. Ha ha ha.
I totally missed that the first two times. I was so delighted on the third time when I saw him do a little sly bleep bleep. And I was like, yeah, you get those golden flying pigs. I loved it.
Me too. That would be so funny to like look at your registry and being like, what the fuck? A little later. Across the store, Lizzie's mulling over toasters, and she seems unusually upset. And David says, oh, here, this is the one that's on your list. You and George want a 4-slice toaster. And Lizzie says, no, nope, I've changed my mind. I want a 2-slice toaster. And David says, okay, what about a crumb tray? Do you want a crumb tray? And she says, no, I want crumbs, David. I really, really like crumbs. And by the way, you know what? I still find joy in the little things. And David laughs and says, okay, well, if crumbs are the little things that give you joy, then get crumbs. And she scans the toaster. That's not on her list. And he says, my goodness, what have you done? And what else do you want, Lizzie? The world is your oyster. And Lizzie has turned into a crazed scanning shopper. She scans the white dove sculpture with the gold crown on its head. She scans the rabbit toilet paper dispenser. All the necessities of married life that she never knew she needed. And in her tizzy scanning whirlwind, she turns and scans, boop, boop, David.
Ooh.
He looks down at her. And she apologizes and says, whoopsie, the scanner slipped. And he says, that's okay. As she hurries away embarrassed.
Ooh, things got a little too close doing the wedding registry. So it's time for a change of scenery. We see Elizabeth and David in a garage with a giant mirror ball and a DJ set up. DJ Joey brushes his shoulder-length hair behind his ears as he stands behind the turntable. You know he prepped for this meeting by smoking a doob in his childhood room and blowing the smoke into a toilet paper roll with a dryer sheet to mask the smell from his mom.
Oh my God. You know a surprising lot of masking weed smells.
friends, Tamara. They're friends. Speaking of his mom, she yells out from the other room, Joey, let the dog out.
Mom, he says, I'm meeting with clients.
So, he says, turning his attention back to the room, we need to decide on your music for the various wedding events. You said you had a list.
Elizabeth looks and discovers that she forgot her list. Not to worry.
I know.
DJ Joey is on the case. I've got plenty of ideas for you two, he says, gesturing at them.
David and Elizabeth look at each other, panic-stricken.
No, we're not together.
He apologizes and swiftly changes the subject.
How about this for your first dance? He says, smoothly putting on Trisha Yearwood's. How do I live without you?
His mom yells at him again, and saying he'll be right back, he turns on mood lighting and rushes out the door to take the dog out.
I love how DJ Joey, as he left to go take out the dog, flipped off the lights and flipped on the mirror ball like sparkle.
Yeah.
He's all set in the mood. Bonk, chicka, bow, now.
They both turn towards the giant disco ball and chuckle about DJ Joey. David says, I think this song is pretty nice. You want to take it for a spin? See if you like it?
Elizabeth agrees. And at first, there's a struggle as they're both trying to lead.
David pauses things.
You know what? I think one of us should lead.
Elizabeth responds, fine. You think you're such a fancy dancer? Show me your stuff.
He takes her hand, draws her close, and she rests her head on his shoulder. They slowly rotate, rocking back and forth in the garage with the disco ball. They are having a moment in the silence between the both of them. And then suddenly, Elizabeth's legs go out and she dips down.
You okay? He says.
She nods and David suggests they go slower. They're dancing close and slow and their moment is interrupted by DJ Joey. He wants to know what they think of the song.
Elizabeth has the look of a deer caught in headlights and David says, I think the song is perfect for the bride and groom.
An awkward beat later, Elizabeth responds, I'm going to meet you back at the house, and rushes out of the garage.
And you would think of all the things that she needs a list for. She has like a 2-page list for the damn ice cream, but she forgets the list for the music. That's when you need a list.
I know. Something's up. Her world is starting to crumble a little.
Elizabeth finds herself at the Flying Otter. She's talking to Sandy about David and how he made her knees go weak.
Server Sandy doesn't care. She just wants to take her break and asks Elizabeth if she's going to order anything.
Elizabeth responds sadly, sure, I'll order a platter, but what I really want is pie.
Sandy says, one platter coming up, but this time takes pity on her and returns with the pie.
Elizabeth thanks her, stares off into the distance.
Thought I had everything planned, written down on a list. But today, I'd lost my list. She takes a bite of pie, and the scene ends.
Elizabeth is lost in love, and Eugene is finding it.
Mm.
He's bringing Louise a huge canvas. He helps her bring it up the stairs, and she says, thank you for helping me, Eugene, and gives him a kiss on the cheek.
Aww.
They are full on in the love tractor beam now. He rubs his cheek as she walks away and smiles.
Aww.
And gets in his car. Across the yard, Lizzie's trying very hard to get up that rope ladder. I think she's being dramatic. Corinne assures me that it is indeed hard to get up a rope ladder. I think we need a rope ladder challenge to decide on that.
Okay, here's the thing. I've watched a lot of television show competitions, and when I first saw rope ladders, I was like, no problem. But then I saw these athletic people trying to get up a rope ladder and really struggling, and I thought, maybe it actually is a little more difficult. You'll notice they never show David climbing up that rope ladder.
Touché.
I bet Ty Ty was like, guys, you can't film me. I don't want to be looking like not cool.
And that's exactly what Elizabeth said, because David comes up and tries to give her ladder advice on how to get up, and she wants none of it. All she wants David to do is look away because she can't do it with them watching. Apparently, there's no sexy way to climb up a rope ladder. As he turns around, she admits that everything's changed since George got stuck across the bridge. For her whole life, she's been doing what's right. Getting good grades, going to dental school, starting a practice, working hard. And lately, she's been thinking about that list she wrote as a kid. Why the heck hasn't she gone to those places? She's stuck. All her and George do is work all day and go to conferences. And she knows that traveling is a small thing for David. And he stops and he says, whoa, you know, all good things, all big things happen with tiny steps. You just need to take those tiny steps to get there. And Elizabeth says, yes, I need to start taking those tiny steps with George. And he looks a little taken back. But she says, can't you picture us traveling together, David? Can't you? And he says, sure. And so she's decided that's what she's going to do. She's changing the plan. She's taking charge. But first, she's going to climb this damn ladder. And she very awkwardly gets up it as David is coaxing and cheering her on.
So while she's climbing the ladder, I was halfway paying attention the third time through. I was doing a little something else, and I hear these noises, and I'm like, what's going on? Are those sex noises I hear? Because of the noises that she's making.
Sadly, no. I'm going to watch that part now, like, turned away from the TV.
Yeah. If you,
and picture it in my head.
If you listen to it, the noises, she's like, and I'm like, whoa, hi there.
Did somebody change the channel?
For real, this is Hallmark. Hallmark.
When she gets up that sexual ladder, she finally sees the amazing view that's at the top of the treehouse. She can see the water. She can see the house. She can see the hills. And it's the amazing view that she's been denying herself.
The next scene has us in the dental office with George. He almost smacks into Denise as they both rush into the hall from opposite rooms in their dental excitement to do dentally things. Denise lets George know that the bridge is going to open tomorrow, and George thanks Denise for always putting in extra hours. Denise responds, I just love staring into mouths. I can't help myself. There's no place I'd rather be. George looks pleased at Punch and walks away while Denise stares after him with hard eyes. We move on to the next scene in the game room. Lizzie and David, or as I like to call them now, Dizzy. It's their almost a couple, but not quite name, are on the couch again watching TV. But the first time, they were in their own corners. This time, they're half reclined, leaning towards each other, sharing a popcorn and watching a Western. Louise comes in and says, I spoke with Bob Dooley today. Uh-huh. Dizzy says together as they continue to watch the TV and munch on popcorn. Louise tries again. The bridge is reopening in the morning. Uh-huh, says Dizzy once again. Louise pushes on. So, George will be back soon? Dizzy freezes with the thought of the cold reality of things going back to normal. Suddenly, the power goes out, and we cut to Dizzy down in the basement.
And we don't mean that in a sexual way.
While David tries to reset the breaker, Lizzie looks at memory boxes that Diana had stored down there. She pulls out the one with David's name on it and finds a slim book, which David nonchalantly asks, can I see that one, please? She hands it to him and continues to look through all the travel books and souvenirs that are in the box. Have you been to all these places? London, Amsterdam, Paris? Elizabeth asks. Pretty much, replies David. After you and George go to Rome, you have to go to Paris. He goes on to talk about Paris-y things. Lizzie looks up at him. What if George doesn't want to go to Paris? She asks. Lizzie, he says, you talk a lot about George's plan and what he wants. But what do you want? I want to go to Paris, she says with a tinge of sadness in her voice. But what will people think? David says softly back. Lizzie, sometimes people around you aren't going to understand your journey. That's okay. They don't need to. It's not for them. She looks sadly reflective, realizing that she's at a turning point, and if she's going to continue following her heart, everything will change. Lizzie, he continues, maybe nobody has told you this before, but it's okay to chase your own happiness. She's been getting by through doing the right thing and making lists for so long, she wonders, what does chasing her own happiness even look like? Also, from my own personal standpoint, breaking out of the mold of who you are used to being is fucking hard and can be very messy. The power turns back on. Breaking the spell, they bid each other goodnight, and Lizzie heads upstairs.
Was that a PSA from Corinne?
That's my Hallmark wisdom. But you know that.
It's really true.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. When you actually take some agency over your life and you're like, holy fuck, like, I have the power to make my own decisions. And then you're like, holy fuck, I have the power to make my own decisions.
And then you realize you're choosing, like, to stay in misery, if you're choosing to stay in misery, or that you're, you know, you can do something else, but that takes a lot of effort. And, like, you went to, you decided mm-hmm. to go to college later, and that was not easy.
Oh, my God, it nearly killed me. It nearly gave, okay, not killed me, that's a little bit dramatic. It nearly gave me a nervous breakdown.
There you go.
The next morning, George is back. He meets Lizzie outside by the water. They gave each other the most awkward kiss, and he senses something's wrong.
Don't you mean they greet each other like two lovers who have been apart for several days?
No. No, I don't. You'll have to watch it to see. It's very painful. It's so painful that he's like, what's wrong with you? And she's like, I'm not in love with you, schmuck pants. Okay, no. Never mind. I'm jumping the gun. They give each other the most awkward kiss. And he says, is something wrong? And she's like, no. And he's like, oh, great. We've got so many things planned for us. We have this fun dental seminar at the university. And she says, sure, George, whatever you want. But then something happens. Something clicks. And then she finally gets some cojones and says, actually, I wanted to talk to you about something. I want to put things on hold for a couple of months and go traveling. And George says, what? We can't leave our practice right now. It's not the right time. And Lizzie says, no, it's the perfect time. We don't have any kids. We haven't even bought a house yet. There's nothing here that we can't put off for a little while we go have an adventure, damn it.
Yeah.
And George reminds her that, no, we can't do that. We have the dental convention coming up, and then we have the two seminars, and of course there's all of our patients that are relying on us. And George clearly is putting his needs in front of Elizabeth. Poor Elizabeth relents and says, okay. She tries to grasp onto one glimmer of hope between them and says, okay, maybe someday we can go then. At least give me that. And he pauses and says, sure. Someday when we're very old and very gray, we'll go to Paris. That's when you really want to go, when you're a geriatric that has a hard time getting around. That's the time to travel. Lizzie gets a weird look in her eyes and says, George, dance with me. And he looks around like he's being punked and says, wait, but now? And she says, yes. She puts on the Trisha Yearwood song and says, okay. And they dance. And it looks super uncomfortable and very awkward. She finally says, can you hold me a little closer? And he tries, but he looks even more uncomfortable and more awkward and only does it for a few beats and then says, are we done now? And she looks at him in the eyes and says, yes, George, we're done.
Ugh.
And scene.
Boy, howdy. Jeez.
How do I live without you? You're gonna find out.
We've arrived at the big event. George and Elizabeth's engagement party. Grandma Vivian is holding court, talking about how much different and no-frills weddings were in her day. Bullshit. George looks miserable, and Elizabeth looks like she's attending her own funeral. The shorter the engagement, the longer the marriage, Grandma Vivian declares. Louise distracts Grandma with meatballs, and David approaches Elizabeth. Would you like to come and dance? Tam's like, I wouldn't mind being distracted by some meatballs. She silently nods. David turns to George. Georgie, how about you? Oh, no. I already tried dancing once today, and it was a disaster. I'll pass. Elizabeth and David go out on the dance floor to get their boogie on. He gives her a twirl, she does a little wiggle, and then suddenly a slow song comes on. You are so beautiful to me. They fold into each other's
arms.
That's
good. We
what?
We met our three-song quota. We usually have to sing like three or more times per episode. Good job, Corinne.
Do we get a free slice of pie? They fold into each other's arms and start swaying back and forth. Suddenly, his knees give out. Are you okay? Lizzie asks. I'm fine. I don't know what that was, says David. They continue to sway in each other's arms. Sing, says Elizabeth sadly. Just then, Diana, the mom, breaks things up by asking everyone to come in for desserts. The dance floor clears, and Dizzy are there holding hands. Realizing they're alone, they unclasp their hands and go inside. George is holding court inside, telling a terrible dentist joke that everyone feels obliged to laugh at. Save it for the dental conventions, George. Read the room. Read the room. Elizabeth pops over and asks George if she can pull him aside for a little convo. He happily goes off with her, totally oblivious of what's about to happen. She tells him that she's had this one goal, the perfect family and life, like she felt he and his family had growing up, and this one plan for how to get there. But maybe having a plan for happiness isn't the same as just being happy. George is looking shook. I need to have a plan, Elizabeth, she responds. I used to be that way too, but ever since the bridge went down, I realized I lost touch with who I really am and what makes me happy, and I need to figure that out. George is reeling in his reserved way, looking stoically distressed. And where does that leave us? He says. She takes off her engagement ring and gives it to him. Is there anything... What?
I guessed audibly.
Audible gasps. Is there anything I can do to change your mind? He asks with a little hope, but she shakes her head no, kisses him on the cheek, and they part ways. David sees Lizzie kissing George on the cheek and says, curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal. As his heart is breaking, thinking they're sharing a tender moment, he books it off the island. And this is when things get interesting, because I thought the movie was going to dive directly into Lizzie finding David and them traveling the world together, but that's not how it ends up panning out.
No, it's not.
It's 1 year later, and Lizzie has been traveling for the past year. She's sent postcards to all the people in her life throughout her journey. After her year, third time of year... After her year of travel, she has finally returned home and is, of course, wearing a beret because, duh, Paris. She arrives home just in time to receive the invitation to Louise and Eugene's wedding. Yay!
See, told you she had enough in her savings to go traveling around without being detrimental to her lifestyle. She still has that weird apartment, too, because she's back in it reading the wedding engagement announcement.
I'm pretty sure she sold her half of the practice to George.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's how she funded all of her trips. Ugh. Elizabeth goes to Louise and Eugene's wedding. It's at night. They're at their parents' house again. There's white tents everywhere. Lots of people dancing and enjoying themselves. Louise and Eugene look very married and very happy.
Yay.
They're going to stamp that letter later. Because they're married now. They can finally share a room. And I'm happy about that. Elizabeth also notices George and Denise dancing and looking very happy together. And he is way more natural with Denise, the dental assistant, than he ever was with Elizabeth. She just keeps watching them or just looking at the crowd surfing.
Yeah.
She just keeps, goes off on her own and drinks champagne by herself at a table when David pops up next to her and says, I didn't know dental hygienists knew those kind of moves. And Elizabeth said, yeah. And did you notice that Denise also caught the bouquet? Just as she says that, George sees them and waves over emphatically. She says, I wanted to write you over the last year, but I didn't know where to send the postcards. And he says, come outside. I need to talk to you. Someplace quieter.
Ooh.
He takes her outside, someplace quieter. And they stand by the water in front of a fire pit whose flames are conveniently flickering right in front of their loins.
Ooh.
And he says, I tried writing you too. That's the only fire I'm going to get in the nether regions in this movie. I'm just going to take a moment to dwell
bask
on that.
In it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bask in the fire at their loins. He says, I tried writing you too. And he pulls the book out that's about Italy that they found in the basement when the power went out that year ago. And he hands her a letter. It has all the same places Lizzie listed in her bucket list that they found in the other book. And in it, there's a note attached that says, I don't know where any of these places are, but if you want to go, I want to go too, but with you. Love, David. She says, what? And he says, yes. I was 13 when I wrote that note, right after I read yours. I was hoping you'd find it, but you never did.
Aww.
You asked me if I've ever been in love, and the answer is yes, once. It was always you.
Aww.
I loved you yesterday. I love you today. I will love you tomorrow. And she's got huge hearts in her eyes. And he says, dance with me. And he does. Aww. And she does. And they do it right. He whispers into her ear, I thought I might get a kiss with that line.
That's what I was thinking too. Because I was like, what? I was like, wait. I thought they were going to kiss. And then she's like, dance with me. And I was like, wait. What about the kiss?
No. That's not. No. Come on now. Don't hold out on us. But she pulls apart and she does kiss him. And it's a good one.
Yeah.
A nice, a good, like probably the top dry kiss.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even a little wet.
I know.
That I've seen so far.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they are still kissing in the next scene where we find them in the treehouse watching TV because that fucker's got electricity too. But David pulls away and says, wait, I need to see what happens next because they're watching that dating show that Elizabeth loves so much. And I wrote that in my notes. You said aw right when I read all my notes.
I'm reading over your shoulder.
He changed her. She's more adventurous. And willing to take the risks, but she's changed him too. Now he likes really crappy reality TV.
The end. Way to bring it home. I like that.
They changed each other. He changed her for the better. I can't say the same for him. That concludes It Was Always You, Corinne. What do you give this movie?
Ooh. Okay. So, I give this movie solid 4 kisses. It was a solidly good movie. It was not mediocre, but it was not amazing. And it was very much lacking in diversity, like a lot, by a lot. It did have Eugene in it, though. So, and I loved me Eugene's and was super happy that he got a love story. So for that little bone that they threw us, I give it 4 dry kisses.
A little bone of it before that second part of the sentence. I'm like, what little bone? Where's the little bone?
What about you?
I mistook bone for something else.
Yeah.
I also would give it 4 kisses. I liked the story. It was sweet. I had some very, very strong feelings about a lot of things in this movie, but it was balanced out by that very nice kiss at the end.
Oof, that was a good kiss.
Solid 4.
Nice.
Oh, and then the talk about making out as a kid. Appreciated that. Getting a little bit about outside of the Hallmark scope. Stretching our legs. I appreciated it.
And the beer for everyone.
Oh, yeah. Woo, we're going to make you alcoholics yet.
So, 4 dry kisses for the both of us.
4 dry kisses.
Thank you so much for joining us. We had a blast. Thank you for listening to our beautiful podcast. And you can reach us at onedrykiss@gmail.com. What if they want to see us in other ways, Tamara?
Then it's One Dry Kiss on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, one spelled O-N-E. And if you like this podcast, please rate and review us. We'd love to hear what you think. Thank you for joining us.
We've got a few ratings, but we could always use more. More. More.
More. We hope you'll join us next time for the rest of our month of June swoon. We will be bringing you much, much more hunkier. Okay, not much more hunky. We will bring you more hunkier, guys.
Oh, my God. Luke McFarlane is much more hunkier.
Oh, Luke. Luke, I am your admirer.
And his love eyes are like, ugh.
He's got the best love eyes.
His love eyes make me feel like he loves me.
No, he loves me. No, me, no, only me,
no,
damn
he
it.
Loves me.
But you'll have to find out who he loves more next time on One Dry Kiss. Mwah. You better not be eating anything crunchy. That's all I'm going to say.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Better turn off that microphone. I don't need to hear it right now, Corinne. I do not need to hear it. I miss chips.
Oh, ate something that you could kind of eat, not something that you absolutely couldn't eat.
What can I kind of eat?
Pickle.
Tell me.
Pickle.
Maybe.
Yeah. It's sort of in the middle, you know?
Yeah. They say the consistency of a banana. So I'm like, this is kind of a hard banana. I'll just say yes. Yes, a hard banana.